My name is Coleman, and I will be your host this morning. I want to thank everybody who's going to be joining us today, who's going to be speaking, who's going to be listening, and for everyone who just has this on the background so they don't have to hear the voices in their head, I really want to just thank you all for tuning into this. We will be joined by a featured guest today, Rustin. Let's see, I'm just joining up here on the panel. While we're getting more people online, I just want to go over and make sure everybody understands the purpose of the show, what this mission is. Just in case this is your first time listening to us, or if you forgot, or if you're like me and you just need a daily reminder not to eat the crayons, the purpose of this show is to defend the values that our nation was founded upon. We champion decentralized, trustless systems that empower individuals and communities and small businesses to eliminate any central authority so we can advocate our cause for a free and open society. We accomplish our mission by utilizing the power of Bitcoin to promote a world where every individual has the undeniable right to control their own destiny, their own assets, and their own privacy. We do not support tyranny in any of its forms, and together we will continue our oaths to safeguard the ideals that define us. We are veterans, we are Bitcoiners, and most importantly, we are for freedom. Hoorah! How is everybody doing this morning?
What's going on, Coleman? How are you? Hey, just want to give a quick shout out to Tom Tabor. I see you out there. Mickey Koss, Randy K, Terrence. Good seeing you guys.
Yes, good morning. Go ahead, Wade.
Good morning. I'm anxious to hear what Rustin has to say. I'm a big fan of his show. So just waking up here in Alaska, 6 o'clock. Time to get ready to go fishing.
Talking about based. Waking up 9 a.m. Let me see. What is that? 7 a.m. your time fishing in Alaska. Arguably the most freedom-loving state in the country. So that is badass. Thanks for the shout-out, Wade.
6 a.m. here. We have our own time zone.
And I just want to make sure that everyone knows that Rustin is going to be our featured guest for this morning. And Rustin, if you don't mind, do you mind just telling a little bit about your backstory for people who aren't familiar?
Yo, awesome. It's kind of a journey, definitely for sure. I was a teacher, taught history and English for about 5 years. The first time I heard about Bitcoin was around 2013 on the Daily Poll. I believe it was when, well, Mt. Gox is back in the news. So Mt. Gox got rug pulled. And at that time, I thought, shit, Bitcoin is just some native asset to that site. I didn't make the connect that it was separate, right? A few years go by, I had, you know, teaching. It's hard to be an anti-establishment, anti-statist within a statist system. I thought I could be like Ron Swanson, fight the beast from within, and then we hit the great bullshit of 2020. I saw, you know, supposed to be leaders of the future of America just completely lose their minds. And I couldn't be a part of that anymore. I wouldn't get in. It got to a point. I had kids. When I say, all right, you're in Mike. You're free to breathe if you want. Do whatever you want. Let's focus on getting our work done. Like, this is bullshit. And I had a administrator come in and start yelling at my kids to put on their masks and all these things. And she asked me why they didn't. I said, they're free to breathe in my classroom. You just killed 6 minutes of time that we could have been working. Get out, please. And resign the next week. And it was all in a desire to go full-time into Bitcoin. During that time, a good member of Bitcoin Veterans gave me my first shot as a researcher for Cafe Bitcoin, and that was Alex Stanzik. And it started with, you know, I wanted to you know, create a show or find a spot to work as a writer, something like that. And there were times in the morning something would come up and I had hunted down all the news and I would shoot the articles over to Alex when someone would ask questions. And one morning he was like, "Hey, how would you like to do research for Cafe?" And I was like, "Oh, let's go." So we got that going. I got denied left and right. So it's going to happen to many of you getting started as well. Or you're probably more talented or better, so you won't have as many hurdles. So, but yeah, I was trying to find my way because this is something I think I found Bitcoin in the Ron Paul campaign of 2008. I just didn't really make the connection to it until 2020 when I saw the crash. But what I noticed was from 2013 to that time, it crashed to $3,000. And I was like, how the fuck is this thing $3,000 still? And I knew at that moment I'd been talking to my family is like, this is, I wrote article. I worked in the college newspapers and those things as well. And wrote an article back in 2009 on how an economic stimulus from the state is economic stim useless. It only leads to inflation. And when this happened, I told my family about the helicopter money that was coming and the level of inflation, the level of money printing, like trying to put it in scale for them compared to 08 to understand the gravity. But also, if you understand history, these things, the window, but it's like China White, you know, someone's out here taking heroin. You know, Kurt Cobain, they said he took enough smack that could have sedated a rhinoceros. Okay. So that is what QE is to the state. Over time, the effect dwindles and it takes so much more to even to quantify any results. And that's what we were looking at. I saw that and I went all in and I was still teaching and I was telling people about it. And what I loved was the fact that all these morons told me that I was wrong. And I knew there was something there. And that gets into, I think, a big topic we're talking about is the truth, freedom of speech. And all throughout history, in our modern time, let's just go back a few years. Think about every single person that was silenced, stifled, shut down, publicly crucified in many ways. Were they wrong? Just ask yourself, were they wrong? Was it misinformation or was it the truth that was trying to be silenced? Now you got to ask yourself, well, why is that? Okay, so why did they attack Bitcoin? It's because it's the truth. And it's Ron Paul, Mises, and Hayek cemented in code that can never be tainted. It's a beautiful thing. This is the greatest opportunity of a free market future we had. And once I saw it, my dream was probably to be in the liberty movement and to do something with that. That's where my heart always was. And then once I stumbled into Bitcoin, March 2020, and I know all of you here too. I mean, you can't stop reading. You can't stop getting into the podcast. You can't stop trying to make these connections, trying to verify. It's an incredible journey. My work at Cafe got me connected with Bitcoin News, helped build Bitcoin News with a couple other guys, and was looking for something, you know, I wanted a real home or to just go out on my own. And Jacob connected me with Nico and just hit the ground running, and it was just such a perfect connection. I felt Nico and Opti are fully on board with the message of liberty and freedom, and that's where we connect, and that's where Bitcoiners connect with everybody, because that is a message that no one can deny. That is a mess. That's the idea. No army, government, anything. Satan can't stop that shit. And I'm here for all of that.
Yeah, 100%. I have a question for you though, Rustin. When you were trying to tell people about what was going on, did you rely more on your learnings from Ron Paul, or did you lean on the history aspect? Because you said you're a history teacher. Where were you pulling your examples from?
Well, and I got my degree in political science. It was kind of a mishmash of all of that. But and college is bullshit. First off, the way they make you do these class, you can skip ahead and get out of a lot of things. But there was one I had never taken, and how I got up to where I was without taking micro or macro is awesome. But I had just read Ron Paul, dude. I read In the Fed, and then I read Bastiat, and then I started getting into Hayek and those things. And I got enticed to take this upper division econ class, and they told me not to do it, and I was going to fail it. But I never studied those things. Just from reading Ron Paul, I ended up getting like a 97 in that bullshit fiat class, because if you understand those basics, the truth about like all that other arbitrary bullshit, it's easy to spit that out. But I would say, yeah, but Ron Paul is going to teach you history. He goes through all those things. Where did the Federal Reserve come from? Why was it created? The Creature from Jekyll Island. I know we all love that. But yeah, all those things go together. Economics is history. Like they connect. You can't tell one story without having the other and paint any sort of real picture, I think.
That's really good. Hey, Wade, did you have a question, sir?
Yeah, I was going to actually follow up with your question. So the 2020, he pretty much covered what I had, like he usually does on the show. So.
Well, that's perfect. So, Rustin, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And I'd like to get your thoughts on some of the things that kind of happened over the last 24 hours. Jacob, could you go ahead and pull that Cantor Fitzgerald video? Get this ready. So we have a clip, and I'm not sure if you all saw it, but Howard Lutnick, I believe his name, from Cantor Fitzgerald, went out and made a speech about how he thinks Bitcoin is going to be impacting the banking and financial services. And so you're not familiar with Cantor Fitzgerald. They're like a leading global financial service firm that provides just a wide range of services, investment banking, institutional quality, fixed income. And during the Bitcoin conference in Nashville this year, they mentioned that they're going to be introducing a Bitcoin financing fund. So they're going to offer $2 billion in financing for high net individuals, hedge funds, asset managers, family offices, so that they can leverage their Bitcoin to finance things. So let's go ahead and let's play that.
I guess the easiest way to get a clear view of where Bitcoin is going over the next 5 years is take a look at the last five, right? The last five, Bitcoin has been an outsider in the finance business, but coming closer and closer and closer. Right now there's an ETF just starting to go a little bit mainstream, maybe a toe in the water of mainstream, but banks still can't clear it. Banks still can't transact in it. Banks still can't custodian it. Banks still won't transact in it, and they won't finance it yet. I think people misunderstand traditional financial service companies. They want to transact in Bitcoin. They want new asset classes to transact in. That's just a good thing, but they need the regulator to say it's okay. Right now, today, right? If a bank were to hold your Bitcoin, they would have to set aside their own money equal to that amount in sort of like in a jail. I mean, you'd say, that's crazy. The answer is that's why they don't hold it. But if you let them hold it, if the regulatory environment was good, you will see all the traditional financial service companies, the big banks, the big brokerage companies, they're all going to go headfirst into Bitcoin pond. That's what's going to happen, and it's coming. It's a slow, steady process, but eventually there's going to be a CFTC chair who says, you know what, Bitcoin is a financial asset, and we're going to treat it as such. And when that happens, you're going to see Bitcoin move in a very, very strong positive direction. So that's why I'm a fan of Bitcoin, It's going to go much higher. It always bounces around like any other financial asset, but ultimately over the next 5 years, as it gets invited into this party.
There's quite a few points to take from that short little segment. But I think some of the most notable things is that he was stating banks don't transact in it now, but once they get the regulation, the clarity to utilize it, they will. And they just need to get a CFTC chairman who gives them the green light. And his time frame that he thinks that this could happen is about 5 years, which I think it'll probably happen a little bit quicker, just kind of with the state of things going on. But I'd really like to get the panel's thoughts on what he said.
It's kind of funny to me when you think about it, because, you know, Bitcoin was created and designed to be the separation from state, and it gives power back to all the people, right, for self-sovereignty and for their wealth to carry forward through time and space. And now the people that have been oppressing us, the people that have proven to us why we need to be self-sovereign with our own wealth, because they've been over-regulating us, are now the ones that seek regulation to join the party, right? And as an agnostic and sort of, you know, neutral and public tool, it is for everybody, even though it's for the people, how Satoshi designed, you know, out of the great financial crisis, it is really for everybody. And it is for governments, it is for nation states, it is for politicians, it is for businesses, because it will help all of them too, and it helps hold them accountable due to the transparency and auditability. But what I think is significant is that, you know, Cantor Fitzgerald is one of the largest financial institutions in the world, and they are one of only, there are only two dozen primary dealers for the government. I mean, there's only 24 entities or institutions that can trade government securities. So they act as like a market maker for the government. So they're just one step. They're right there, just one degree at the level where the government is essentially printing money, and they are this orange-pilled. The head of Cantor Fitzgerald is a Bitcoiner. So I think it's pretty significant.
Yeah, absolutely, especially just because they're discussing it. It makes everybody else in that industry pause and listen.
I agree 100%. I think... got to look at the game theory. We love that. We're looking around, but I think this is, you know, we talk about separating, you know, money from state, but I think this is part of that transition. This is that the Trojan horse is inside the gates right now. Like, what is Cantor Fitzgerald trying to accumulate? Are they trying to accumulate more cuck bucks? No, they want to accumulate the most pristine collateral on the planet. So they're going to custody it. You get cuck bucks to spend, eventually that can end up as a conditional sell. So that's something to be conscious of. But this is part of that progression. I'm sure a lot of people here love Jim Rickards. And I like his take on this modern gold theory. And he's pretty correct. You just plug in Bitcoin to that. And this is happening on the micro level there with Cantor Fitzgerald, with BlackRock and the ETFs. They are accumulating Bitcoin and allowing paper returns. That's good for some people. We want in-kind redemptions if we want this to really move forward. And I think a lot of people are on board with that. I think at the Bitcoin conference, there were also images of the head of Cantor Fitzgerald and Trump. And I think they have had meetings together in the past. So if we go back to meetings they had around 2017-18, and these entities are still working together, this is just crazy. And I think we are just seeing the incentives out. Why did BlackRock want Bitcoin? Why does Cantor Fitzgerald want Bitcoin? Is it that they want it, or is it that they need it at this point? The writing, I think we can see, is on the wall. And as far as many people is seeing the recession ahead, the amount of QE that's going to be necessary to keep things afloat. So I think this is all part of the process, because, you know, we pristine collateral, the most desired store of value, it's accumulated, then people work and trade. Like, it's part of the process. And I think, like Terrence said, this they were saying 5 years. I think certain things that could happen, especially in November, would expedite this process personally.
Yeah, right on there. It's, you know, it's Bitcoin doesn't need them, right? They need Bitcoin. And all of these financialized institutions are always looking for a couple of things. One, yes, they're looking for pristine collateral. They're looking for the best store of value. And in the past, that's been stocks and equities, and they always get advantaged of that due to the Cantillon effect. They sit right at the top of the money printer. And also real estate, right? BlackRock, Blackstone, Vanguard, right? They own the majority of the real estate, at least here in America. And so when they look at these things and they look at the friction of real estate as well as stocks, and then they look at Bitcoin, it's like once you learn Bitcoin and once you see the properties of Bitcoin, you can't deny, like, wow, as you just said, Rustin, this is the most pristine collateral. And eventually, and this is where Cantor Fitzgerald is coming in, they eventually want to lend off of Bitcoin. And, you know, a lot of Bitcoiners, you know, we don't want to sell our Bitcoin. Why, you know, why sell the best asset in the world for the second, third, or fourth? Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Sell it into fiat? And, you know, what are you going to do with fiat that's guaranteed to debase? So we want to be able to take advantage of Bitcoin and to be able to lend off of it. And think about this, like think about just the process that you have to go through to get loans in the fiat world versus here's Bitcoin. It's fungible. I don't need to see if your Bitcoin, Rustin, is better than yours, Gabe, or yours, AC's. It's Bitcoin. I can see it right there on the time chain. I'll lend against it in seconds. I don't even need to know who you are because you have Bitcoin. So yeah, like these people, BlackRock saw this a long time ago. And it was smart of Uncle Larry to jump in the game as soon as possible.
Yeah, well said, Terrence. The one thing that he Howard brought up was that if the banks do get the approval for it, they're going to have to hold it 1-to-1, so meaning 100% reserves. How do you think that's going to be a deterrence for banks jumping in, or do you think that they're not going to have an issue doing that?
No, I think it's going to hold everybody accountable. I think the proof of reserves movement will speak loud. You know, just like looking at the 11 Bitcoin ETFs, there's one or two of them that already are optimizing proof of reserves. And I think Bitwise is one of them. You can look right on the time chain and there's all the Bitcoin that they say they're holding. And I don't think all 11 ETFs will continue to survive over the years. I think some of those will start to go away. And I think it'll be the proof of the ones that operate with proof of reserves that are going to move forward, because that's the whole point. We want to see this. We want to know that it's not being, you know, rehypothecated, and there isn't any sort of like manipulation or malfeasance with Bitcoin, because that's the whole point. We don't want it to just become crypto or fiat all over again.
Terrence, I think you just hit on something awesome. Like, isn't it incredible that the quote money of criminals is forcing the Wall Street goons to be honest and transparent? Like, it totally flips the balance of power of all this. They used to, you know, they want to know every single penny you spend, and but you can never audit the Fed, you can never audit these people, but this is what it was supposed to be: a government that works for the people, and these institutions that work for the people that we are able to hold accountable. And the script has been completely flipped. And I think that's incredible. And what about, is this something we're looking at with this new exchange down in Texas? What if they had the optionality of goods and commodities priced in Bitcoin, displaying that to the public? That would be amazing too.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the exchange in Texas, Rustin?
Yeah, there is supposed to be BlackRock and a few others coming together to make a exchange to contest the CME and those. So it would just be another option of basically the stock market and those things, another place to trade. And it looks like BlackRock is behind that and other entities. Let me pull that up real quick here.
Because I have heard that they were going to try something in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to counter Wall Street. So there wasn't going to be any ESG or DEI narratives to it. It was just going to be, is that the same thing?
Yep. BlackRock and Citadel plan to launch new stock exchange in Texas to compete with the New York Stock Exchange. And yeah, they had mentioned tokenization and these different things as well. So will Bitcoin bonds be available there? Like what Samson and them have worked on in El Salvador, what all will be available on it? It's going to be interesting. And they secured funding June 16th, $120 million backed by BlackRock and Citadel, fully digital stock exchange, most liquid exchange in the United States, a new world of quote-unquote tokenized assets. So what I just want to know is, will you be able to trade in Bitcoin, stocks, commodities, etc.? That would be a very eye-opening, because, you know, we explain how the cost of goods goes down over time, but to provide a visual on an exchange backed by BlackRock and Citadel, I mean, that's just, you know, Alex says it over the time, or all the time, over the target, my friends. You know, it's one of those.
Does anyone else have any comments or thoughts on the Cantor Fitzgerald statement before we move on or segue to the next topic?
Just that we can all front run this, right? Like just a year ago, we were chopping around in the 20,000 range before the ETFs hit. And everyone's like, oh my God, why are we sitting at 20,000 for so long? Bitcoin's become a stable coin. And, you know, now we're in the 50s, 60s, and people are doing the same thing. And remember, even though the ETFs are here, all of the banks, the wealth managers, they're still learning. They're still coming on board. They're barely able to sell these products to the boomers and the people that just want to passively be in something. They don't even have to understand Bitcoin. But that's coming, and it's going to come very quickly.
Yes, 100%. And speaking of front running with price, according to the former NBA player for Chicago Bulls, Scottie Pippen, he had a dream. Quote, Satoshi Nakamoto visited me in my dreams last night and predicted that the Bitcoin price would be at $84,650 on November 5th of 24. Not financial advice, end of quote.
Remember the 5th of November, says Scotty. Okay. Maybe Scotty's coming around. He was shitcoining out there for a while. Maybe he's becoming a maxi. You know, he's coming around. He understands proof of work. He should get it.
He has been lurking in Bitcoin spaces lately. He'll show up. He won't come up to stage. People invite him, but he has been listening. So you got to give him some credit. He might be following the same path that a lot of us did.
Absolutely. Like, man, I had a reversible Pippen and Rodman jersey when I was a kid. My Basset Hound like ate them, but major fan. I would love for him to be a Bitcoin maxi spreading the message of Satoshi. I mean, the guy was like, how the hell did he go to some no-name college and he's like the water boy? And then he goes out and the coach sees him playing with the guys. He's like, hey, Scotty, you know, maybe you should play. And he goes out and the rest is history. It's incredible. So, yeah, we see this everywhere. And from the Trump brothers and these things, everyone climbs Mount Stupid. And we just hope to expedite their journey and provide them, okay, I know what you're doing. It's just like your parents, right? When you're a kid, you're like, yeah, screw you, I'm doing it anyway. Then you find out mom and dad were right, man. I should have just listened. You know, it's like the American HODL back 2018-19, slapping truth on people and the Bitcoin maxis. But you know, everyone is going to deliver it. And just like I was a football coach, played football in college. You know, everyone gets coached differently. I could take getting spit thrown in my face, yes, sir, and go back and run the play. Other people, they'll break. You got to know how to come across to different people at their level. Some people need tough love. Some people just need a few different touch points. But all roads lead to Bitcoin.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of climbing Mount Stupid, you mentioned this earlier, Rustin, but the former CEO of Mt. Gox is launching a new crypto exchange later this month in Poland. He's quoted to say that he wants to make right what went wrong by launching his new European crypto exchange, end quote.
Are you talking about Mark Carpel?
No. Sorry, Terrence, go ahead.
Oh, is that Carpels you're talking about, Coleman?
No, I didn't write down his name. Let me see. Yeah, you know what? I think it is. Give me a second. I have it. I just got to pull it up
real quick. Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, I think you said CEO of Mt. Gox, which would be Mark Carpels. I just didn't know that guy was resurfacing.
No, it is. Yep, it is Carpels. Nope. No, I got to find out as I got to.
So that's okay. I derailed you. Let's just continue. We'll just go with CEO of Mt. Gox. That's good.
Yeah, it's going to be called what? Ellipics? And I mean, all right, Mount Stupid. There's a process. And the thing is, you're supposed to learn from your mistakes, like up at the peak there, and you start coming down. You don't keep climbing the fucking mountain. And then, like, just the fact that it's quote unquote a crypto exchange, you know, that it's very telling of what's coming here. So yeah, if it was Bitcoin only, if it was integrating Lightning, if it was doing things like that, maybe there'd be something there. But this is looks like just a new pig with a different shade of lipstick. From the looks of it, good luck to Mr. Mt. Gox. But you know, just saying, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot.
No, and there was a lot of controversy of what went on with Mt. Gox when he took over. And it was Mark who's launching this new exchange. Real quick, I want to shout out Punchplate. I see you out in the audience. Good morning. And good morning to DJ Valerie. I see you out there. Hope you all are doing well. The next thing I'd like to cover, and this kind of goes into what we were talking about this morning with banks and the implications of them holding Bitcoin as a reserve. The FBI put out a statement yesterday stating that North Korean actors may be attempting malicious cyber activities against companies associated with the cryptocurrency ETFs. So they gave out a warning and a list of what to watch for and how to protect yourself. I think we could definitely dive into this and talk about when are the exchanges or the custodians going to move to something like a cold card wallet to hold it.
Well, wait, Coleman, are you saying when will the exchanges themselves change their custody? Or you mean the people on the exchanges? I think that's what you mean, the latter.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, copy that. Yeah, because the exchanges are already extremely robust. I mean, I know we like to hate on Coinbase, and I'm in that same camp, but it's like they've got such a robust multi-sig enterprise key system that North Korea is not going to hack Coinbase. Let's just be honest. But yes, you're right about people. Yeah, individuals.
And I think that's what the article was warning. Oh, go ahead, Rustin. Sorry.
Oh, I think Tony at the Bitcoin Way and some others put out a great tweet of the greatest honeypot is there. The greatest hack is yet to happen. But Terrence is right. And just like Satoshi's wallet, Coinbase's wallet, those are massive bounties sitting out there. Those are massive honeypots. And throughout the years, they have not been subject to a massive attack yet. That's not to say it won't happen. And we know how these things go. It's likely to eventually happen. We hope, but that's the thing. Why are you hoping and trusting their security when you can hold it yourself? This is the revolution. This is the whole point of holding your wealth. It's immutable. You can transfer it anywhere in the world. Why would you sacrifice all the benefits of Bitcoin for paper gains and an eventual rug pull? why do they hold it to begin with? Why are they accumulating it? Why is BlackRock now and these others moving forward at such a fast pace, and other nation states, Russia, we can see. So why is this happening? Why is this becoming open? They want it, and they are going to race to accumulate it. They have to. And this is, we're in this game right now of a lot of people are on Mount Stupid, including some of the best and brightest on the planet. So front run them now, because when this goes, when it starts, it's going to be insane. What are we at? 2.3 million coins on exchanges. We already have a million or so accumulated throughout the ETFs total. So, I mean, you can look at the price, or you can take a look at what people are doing, the actions other countries and major institutions are taking, and you need to make your own decisions, but you don't want to be on the wrong side of history on this one.
No, absolutely not. And then, Rustin, I think y'all had British HODL on Simply last week, and I think he did a really good job with his point. When the price moves and it gets to $100,000, it's going to exclude the vast majority of people, because you just don't have that amount of money just sitting around. Even millionaires don't have that amount in their bank accounts. They have it in assets, they have it in different things, and you just can't liquidate that really quick to acquire Bitcoin. And I think he was spot on his point that once we get to a six-digit Bitcoin price, there's really only going to be large players that can accumulate it.
That's why it is so crucial now. And the years of work educators have been doing, spreading this message, and so thankful to the ones that got me here, but you guys doing what you're doing, there's going to be a switch that flips, and it's happening. But there's also at the same time this balance to protect these entities against the individual. Why is that? Why is the EU working to attack self-custody so much? Because it's a revolutionary idea, I guess, that people be allowed to spend money how they want and with people who they want. I mean, it sounds like we've been through Citizens United. We know software is speech, so I don't even know why this is even an issue, but I also do believe that eventually the ultimate canon, if it ever gets there, that sends Bitcoin will be Supreme Court backing Bitcoin with precedent, if it ever came down to it. That's a little theory I've been working on, just if you're looking adversarially of where different groups want to lead things. If there was a 6102, et cetera, how can you force that? I mean, think about the implications. A 6102 on speech? What? What does that even mean? You know? So that would be the type of ideas that they would be grappling with and trying to condemn. We're winning very hard right now. We just got to make sure that people understand the power of self-custody, that you're Larry Fink. Larry Fink works for you. Michael Saylor works for you. You know, everyone on Team Bitcoin is building the free market future that you want to be a part of, because the antithesis of that is nothing anyone wants to be. I don't think anyone would volunteer into that if they knew exactly what it was they were volunteering into. So making sure we spread freedom, making sure we spread this message. And everyone's going to do it in a different way. You know, if you watch my show, you're what's wrong with this guy? I'm more the Dostoevsky, the fool type guy. Others are going to come across philosophically like Breedlove. Others are just going to open up all these avenues like Saylor. Everyone is going to have their style. Don't think you have to be anyone else. The way you share the message is going to be the way you share it, and somebody's going to resonate with it, and then you know go and build from there. But I think great things are happening here all across. Did Bitcoin just build the most powerful political coalition in American history? It's very possibly so. where did all these guys start speaking a couple of years ago? The Bitcoin conference leading up into this election. Then they speak at it again. Then they all united under the same banner. It seems like the Orange Party is going pretty mainstream here. Just a lot of people haven't woken up to it.
No, you're right. It is becoming a political. You can just look. Last night was the Republican primary. I don't know what state it is, but it's an Elizabeth Warren state. And John Deaton won his primary hands down. So you could definitely make the argument that that Senate race is going to be a Bitcoin race.
And this is going to happen more and more. It's game theory. Is it? Now, you will get those that honestly support Bitcoin, but you're going to get those that are going to, you know, just support it with spitting out whatever they have to for political support. But either way, Bitcoin wins. What does that mean? It means they have to support it or else they're going to lose. So embrace all of it on every front, because it's them bending the knee at the end of the day. And it's a beautiful thing, whether you want to look at it in that, whoa, they're forced to bend the knee, or they're joining Team Bitcoin. Maybe it's going to slowly start to change their views and ideals politically. How did all these people come together that were all from these different parties? That's interesting. Kind of sounds like the many people I've met in Bitcoin that come from every single political background you could think of. It's incredible. This is spreading, and it's because at the root of it is freedom. Freedom, it unites everyone. That's something everyone desires and needs. If there is going to be any type of free society, it has to happen. And when you have free and honest money, I don't know, there's something interesting in if we, you know, maybe we get a little woo-woo or whatever, but in the Bible, you know, or the Quran, gold and silver, honest money. In the Constitution, gold and silver, honest money. And the founders rejected paper money. And why is that? So this dishonesty of money leads to a corruption of the language of value. It corrupts society. It corrupts the leaders of that society. Look at Rome and the slow deterioration. No one else is immune from those sorts of downfalls, sadly. And these signs that we see happening all around us have all happened before. And, you know, it's just looking at it. It's not that the ship can't be righted. You know, you can go down with the ship. You can choose to, but that's the thing. You have a choice. You have an option, and you have hope in a better, brighter future. And that's what Bitcoin provides in sound money. And if you look at the people, maybe the years since you've been in Bitcoin, think of the people you've connected with, you've talked to, the friendships you've made. And think about those type of people, who they are. Are they good and honest people? Are they on a message, you know, on a mission to spread freedom and sell money to people? And why is that? Why do a lot of Bitcoiners like families? Why is there a connection to spiritual life, or, you know, trying to be just and virtuous? It's interesting that there is a social effect in sound money. Why does the state not want that to take effect? It's interesting. Fiat money makes people reliant on those same inept people. You can keep people where they are. You can keep people with this glass ceiling over their head. And that's what's happened. And slowly, the middle class has been eradicated, and this is just like the boiling frog thing. And when I visit Denver now, it's sad, the level of homelessness. I went and did the Manitou Incline, and then we come back, and we have hotels, you know, being overrun. These are signs of a fiat society. A fiat society doesn't value individuals, their personal property, and it doesn't value virtue or morality. And that's what's so tough, I think, for all of us to handle today and to grip. But we know what we have on our side. We have the truth. And we know that the truth is never stopped all throughout history. It'll always find a way. And that's what we have on our side. So you have every fucking reason to be optimistic. You have every fucking reason to feel empowered, because what you're holding is something they can't take from you. And it's something that will last much longer than they fucking will. So
100%. That was an amazing rant right there. Thank you, Rustin. I want to go back just a little bit to something you'd mentioned earlier with the 6102 attack. I'd like to get your thoughts or opinions on it, because you have a lot of states that are trying to implement it, so it's just a natural right to own or hold Bitcoin. And I'd like to get your thoughts on what would happen if there was a 6102 implementation to try and take Bitcoin. What happens to the citizens of these states? I'll use Texas as an example. They're making it so no one can take it from you. You're allowed to hold your own wallet.
Yeah, I think that this is part of that gradual step towards the Bitcoin versus the Supreme Court. You have states advocating for people to have property rights, and then you have other states advocating for the belief that individuals don't have a right to their own property. I think it's cemented in the blood of an American and in so many other cultures, property rights, what that means, and where those type of moves can lead a society, especially a society that maybe there's a lot of Bostonians still alive in, that will not cower or bend the knee to something like that. And you have leaders in states that are that same way. You have this interesting dynamic that the state, there's the Rick and Morty, the Citadel of Ricks, right? What we destroyed the government. We replaced it with the government. We got rid of the British and we became the British, but now we have other colonies within the United States having to reinstitute and bring forth those principles again. This is a cycle of the state, the cycle of persecution. It's always going to look to gain more strength and power, and it's our duty to use tools like Bitcoin to check them. And it used to be the duty of the media to check them, not be a fourth branch of the government. But that's why we create counter propaganda. And what we all do here is try to spread the sound money gospel and the counter to statist propaganda in every single fashion we can. Everyone here is fighting the statist in a different way. My dad runs a local newspaper, and we always talk about that. You know, you got 100 people might have watched the YouTube show or whatever, but he's fighting the statist in his own way. And everyone's doing that, and everyone doing that is on the right side of history here. Kind of got off track. Get me back, Coleman.
No, you're doing good. I could keep listening to your rants. They're very powerful. I don't want to stop you at all.
But it's just an impressive time that we are in, that I've also seen. I don't know about you guys, but different people in my life starting to understand the gravity of these things. And it's sad that it takes sometimes the true, you know, like Orwell said, how do you imagine the future? Some people have to catch the boot one time first to be like, okay, you know, a lot of us probably like, you know, combat sports. Forrest Griffin didn't start fighting till he was bleeding. And, you know, some people are like that. And it's happening now. We see it all over the place. There is a massive movement and coalition around going against what is. And that is fine. And Bitcoin is a part of all of that. And it's a great opportunity to spread that message to everyone included in this, from the RFK supporters to the Rokana supporters to the Thomas Masseys. I mean, we're all over the place. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing to see. I wonder how many people here were in that spaces just a couple of years. God, what was that? This is like 4 years ago now with Bukele and the announcement. And think about that. How many people were in that? Well, like 5,000 people thought we broke the internet. And just the other day, you know, we have millions coming in to listen to spaces where the message of freedom and people and advocates sharing that message are doing so in different ways. It's crazy how fast this was moving. It's crazy how fast also the counter movement to control is. Rumble, the growth of Rumble, the growth of Noster. This recent event with us at Simply, I mean, there's the negative side. Then there's also dogs don't bark at parked cars. So, you know, we're going to stay on message and keep doing so. And I think something that we have to be mindful of is which platform we use and how to use it. Think about we talked about the Bostonians back in the day. The Anons get this more than anyone. How did Franklin and Jefferson and Washington and Sammy Adams and all these people send their messages? They were coded. They were encrypted. They kept their identities hidden. And why did they do it? Because it was fucking necessary at that time. And that's, if you look at that in history, and if you put that same, you know, put the metaphor on it today, it's happening. It's here. The Bostonians are the Bitcoiners. And the Bitcoiners holding Bitcoin in self-custody. And it took a while till the rest of the colonies woke up to what was going on. Boston was saying, shit is fucked, guys. You don't get it. And it wasn't until they came for the weapons, and they silenced people, and they flooded the colonies with a fake currency, devaluing theirs. All these things, a culmination of events, right? But who was on the forefront of that? The Bostonians, the people who saw the state infringing on people's liberty and what that meant in the grand scheme of things. And Bitcoin is the sly roundabout way of reinstituting, redeclaring Magna Carta on any and everyone. Yeah, this, you are the individual. Yes. you can take my life. You can do a lot of things, but you're not getting my fucking corn. So how about that?
Yeah, 100%. And make sure you take self-custody of your corn and make sure it's secure. Make sure you have a hardware wallet, cold storage hardware wallet. Really quick, Rustin, we're running out of time, but I just want to, because I know you're still talking about Bitcoin Daily, but I'd just like to know about in your circle, what are you finding is the catalyst where people are a little bit more open to listening to what you have to say about it? Just really quick, I was at an event this weekend with a lot of parents, and one of the biggest things that allowed me to talk about Bitcoin was the inflation, so cost of goods, and the fact that they don't know how they're going to afford a vehicle or a house for their kids when they get older. So I'm just trying to figure out if that's just kind of where everybody's at, and if that's the turning point that's going to make everybody find Bitcoin.
Man, you got me thinking. So when I went on that hike with my wife, we went and saw the grandparent in-laws, and it was sat out there with my uncle and her, and my uncle-in-law knows I'm a big Bitcoiner, and somehow, and I just tried it like now, you don't start it, you don't push. Let them direct it into that arena in some way. And they were talking about different things they had seen about social credit scores. And so they were going down that rabbit hole talking about it. And so, you know, I just started to explain. You see, and my grandma's she's an interesting woman. She was talking about the mark of the beast, and that got her thinking about that. And I was like, well, you can think of a CBDC. And so we got to, all right, so you don't like this, or you said I don't like pork tacos on Twitter, therefore you can't go to the grocery store this week, or something like that. And she said, well, how can you? I was like, well, Grandma, I've been telling you. Maybe I need to look into that, you know? But she just, you get whatever, wherever someone leads, it could be inflation, it could be real estate. But I think being flexible and being, don't plant all the seeds at once, damn it. Like, fuck me. I don't know how many times I've done that. Like, you come in and it's like, you know, they're stealing our wealth. You don't understand. We're all going to be poor. They're going to put us in pods. And they don't like that. That hasn't worked well. So it's coming a softer approach based, find what they want to know and give them that. And you don't have to tell them everything. Like, I'm learning this too. I want to unleash and go down these rabbit hole, but we are in the battle we're in. And this is what the Bostonians knew. So we have to be clever. We have to be smart. There's other ways to say what you want to say. Like, you can be clever in using props. You can show something without saying something. There's all sorts of ways to get around it and get the message across without being that inner barbarian. Be clever with that inner barbarian, and that's how we're going to spread freedom propaganda much better, I believe.
Absolutely. Really quick, before we get closing remarks, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to our partners and thank them. Solo Satoshi, go ahead and decentralize that mining pool, solosatoshi.com. Black Sheep Ammo, they were the ones that graciously donated the 6,000 rounds for our range day at Nashville. Check them out at blacksheepammo.com. Silent Faraday Bags, make sure you're protecting your phone, your computers, your hardware wallets. They are designed to prevent EMPs, solar flares, prevent them from damaging your electronics. Check them out at slnt.com/BTC vets, and you'll save 15% on that. Also, go ahead and check out Punchplate. Make sure that when you have your hardware wallet and you have your seed phrase, put it on metal. Fires will burn paper, water will destroy paper. Punchplate has metal so that it can withstand that. Check them out at coddle.co. And we're right at the top of the hour, so I'd like to go ahead and get some closing remarks. And I definitely want to thank Rustin for coming on today. I really liked that your speeches, your rants. They really, I hope they put everybody in a good mood and get them all fired up for what's to come. Do you have any last comments, Rustin? And where can we go to help you and Simply?
Man, thanks so much for this, guys. I don't do this often. I'm more of the, you know, tell the news kind of guy. So this was a lot of fun. Yeah, guys, be sure to check out Simply Bitcoin. We got a lot of surprises on the way. We got a great IRL coming tonight. We'll have Simply Sessions. I'll have an episode tomorrow. And then Friday, we got a new addition to Simply that's going to be dropping some content for you. Thank you. You guys have missed him a little bit, but he's going to be back in sharing the Sound Money Gospel with us. And we're so happy to have him on board. We're so happy to have I couldn't believe this thing. Like I said, my episode come out of the mountains and we're getting banned, but the amount of love and support from everyone, this is crazy that a few, few castaways and Island of Misfit Toys can get together, share the message of freedom, and this kind of thing can happen, and we can win. We're all winning. That's what Cantor Fitzgerald's telling you. That's what this entire political coalition that just formed, and every single one of those people came from the Bitcoin conference. This is, you know, am I just fucking eating crazy pills? I don't think so, guys. There's a lot of coincidence, too many happening all at once. But we're on the right side of history. Freedom's winning, the truth is winning, and that is what Bitcoin's all about.
Absolutely. Does anyone else have anyone else want to follow that up? I'm going to take that as a no then. So Rustin, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It was an absolute pleasure. I want to thank all the speakers, Terrence, Gabe Lord, AC, Wade. I really appreciate you guys jumping up here every day and contributing. Also, all the listeners out there, Tom Tabor, BTC Hoddle, I really want to thank you guys for listening. So that'll be a wrap for today's show. Again, I want to thank everybody for listening. Make sure you tune in every week, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Central Time, for some of the best content that's going to be out there and available. We released a new Bitcoin Veterans podcast last night. I think it was Shane Hazel and Mike Colbert were just freestyle ranting. So make sure you go check that out. And we'll see you guys tomorrow morning. Go out there and crush it.